Let's have the Judiciary Committee please come to order. It's 1:37 on the afternoon of Friday, April the 6th, 2012. We have a quorum to conduct business. Senator Pascavant has freshly arrived. Senator Coghill is here. Myself, Senator French. I think we expect Vice Chair Wilikowski in the near future. There are four bills on the agenda today. Two Senate bills, SB 224, SB 134, two new bills, HB 229, HB 274. I intend to hear them in that order. Let's turn first to SB 224. That's a bill brought to us by the Labor and Commerce Committee. We have a new CS before us today. /M, if we could have a motion to adopt that CS.
Mr. Chair, I so move that we bring it before the committee for purposes of discussion.
Senator Pascavant has moved the CS before us. Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, that brings the CS before us. Let's turn to the committee staff. Mr. Owen, welcome to the committee for an explanation of the changes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Dana Owen. I'm staff of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. This is a CS that was drafted by your office, but I'm happy to read into the record the changes that have been made with the from the original bill. And we are in support of all the changes.
Let's stop and welcome Senator Wilikowski, the Vice Chair, and then we're on SB 224. We're about to get an explanation of the changes of the CS. Thank you. Go ahead.
Certainly. Mr. Chairman, in the first section of the bill and then in several other places later in the bill, the word individual and at least one instance the word person has been replaced with the word advocate, which is then defined in term the term is then defined in section 2D of the bill. Secondly, in section 2B, the following changes were made. The provisions of paragraphs 1 and 2 were changed to more closely track the language of similar provisions in existing privileges under court rules. Provision 3, that is paragraph 3, was added to clarify that no privilege exists for matters of workplace safety. And those are the changes, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Owen, thank you. Questions for Mr. Owen about the CS?
The last one, please.
Senator Coghill. I think he's referring to page 2,
line
17.
Correct.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. There's no privilege if what you're doing is trying to disclose something that would stop an injury or death in the workplace.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Thank you.
Very good. Questions from the committee? It being towards the end of the session, I'd solicit a motion. Senator Wilikowski.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we move CS for Senate Bill 224, version M, out of committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, the bill's moved, and we'll finish our business on the next bill before we stop and sign the paperwork. Let's turn then to, thank you, CS for Senate Bill 134, that we have a new CS there, /D. If we could have a motion to bring that CS before us.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Wilikowski has moved the CS before the committee. Is there objection? And seeing none, the CS before us, we'll turn to committee staff, Ms. Smith, for an explanation of the changes.
For the record, my name is Cindy Smith. I'm staff to Senator French. The committee CS before you simply takes the existing court rule regarding child support awards and places it in statute.
And I'll go on to explain that in my conversations with the bill sponsor, I was uncomfortable with both moving it into statute, which is a significant change, and changing how we did the calculations. I took most of the testimony we heard at the last hearing to be objections to the new calculations. And so in the effort to promote compromise, we thought a one-step process was enough. Keep the rule as it is, move it into statute. And with that, there are two small amendments we need to make to the bill. Please turn to page 6. Page 6, line 21, you will see the word a court. I'm going to move an amendment to that to replace that word with the tribunal. The amendment is to strike the word, the two words, the court, and replace it with the tribunal. That's amendment number one. I'll move it. Is there objection to amendment number one? Hearing and seeing none, amendment number one is passed. There's one more small amendment on page 9, line 12. You'll see the word or is the third word in the sentence. We need to insert a word. Amendment number two would be to insert a word monthly so that line 12 would then read insurance payments or monthly cash medical support made under AS 25 28040. That's amendment number two. I'll move it. Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, amendment number two is adopted. That brings the CS before us. Senator Wilkowski.
Ready for motion, Mr. Chairman?
Please.
Chairman, I would move that we move CS for Senate Bill 134, version D, as amended, with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Objection. Hearing and seeing none, the bill's moved. Thanks to the bill's sponsor, and we will take a short eddies to do the paperwork. We're back on the record, and let's turn now to HB 229. I see the bill sponsor here, Representative Feige. Welcome to the committee. I also see Senator Menard. Welcome to the committee. Please come forward, put yourself on the record, and the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Representative Eric Feige, representing House District Number 12 and sponsor of House Bill 229. The bill was drafted at the request of the Big Game Commercial Services Board to address concerns over the regulation and licensing of the activities of providers of commercial services to big game hunters. This bill does four things. It expands the regulatory authority of the board to allow it to create necessary regulations to carry out its purpose of regulating the activities of providers of commercial services to big game hunters and provide oversight similar to that provided by other professional regulatory boards. It recognizes the importance of the guide profession in our state by adding a provision to statute allowing those that have retired from the profession as a licensed guide to be recognized as such. It clarifies provisions in statute that allow employment between guides and how guide outfitters supervise guides working in their employment. And finally, it changes a provision in statute to allow a judge to have discretion to order the board to suspend the license of a professional guide for minor violations, such as procedural violations of game laws, if the court sees fit, instead of requiring the court to order the suspension of a license. Regulation of professionals in the guiding industry by this board and the provisions of this bill pertain to the regulation of guides statewide on state, federal, and private land and are not related or connected to proposals concerning guide use areas on land by the Department of Natural Resources. I will be followed by my staff, Mike Pascal, who will take you through the sectional analysis of the bill.
Thank you, Representative Feige. Mr. Pascal, if you want to come forward. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. For the record, Michael Pascal, staff to Representative Feige. What I'd like to do is go through a quick sectional of the bill for you, covering the different changes. In Section 1 of the bill, it does provide additional authority to the Big Game Commercial Services Board to create regulations regarding the regulation of big game guides. Primarily, the current statute uses the word required, and it's been an issue for the board in some cases in writing regulations that are needed to carry out the chapter but are not required. So that's the first section. Section 2 just creates the provision of the retired status license that's already been mentioned, and also specifies that no privileges are granted under the license to provide any services.
Can I just stop you and ask whether this is just some, you know, sort of nice gesture we're offering to folks who spent their lives guiding and now they've retired?
Mr. Chair, that is part of it. The second is that some of these individuals are also involved in marketing of guide services and other services outside of the state, and it allows them to continue the designation that, or state that they're a retired guide or they are a guide in the state.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Section 3 clarifies the language to specify that a guide outfitter may provide the services of a Class A assistant guide, which is a lower level guide, under the control of a contracting guide outfitter anywhere that the contracting guide outfitter is licensed to contract hunts. Section 4 changes requirements for a registered guide outfitter to require them to primarily be in the field, supervising, participating in, and conducting a hunt as defined under regulations by the board, unless a Class A guide is conducting the hunt as regulated by the board.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Wilkowski.
On that point, the current statute says the registered guide shall be physically present in the field. What's the rationale for changing that to primarily in the field supervising?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, in conjunction with the other changes in this bill to allow the board to write additional regulations, because if you try to define in the field, generally in the field is outside of a municipal or developed area or off of a state airport, which only requires that they contact them under the statute in that way one time during the hunt. There's actually no directly defined supervisory role in that process. So with all the group of changes in this bill, the board is forced to spell out the changes that are required, or the changes that make and define what the supervision is. The current supervision that's in there is more of an afterthought type of activity. So the changes that the board will make to the regulations will carry out what's required under the chapter.
Please continue.
Section 5 provides the board with the power to suspend or revoke a license with someone engaged in conduct involving unprofessionalism, moral turpitude, or gross immorality. Section 6 changes the penalties for certain violations to allow the court to suspend a license instead of requiring the court to order the license to be suspended. Section 7 simply allows a fee to be collected for the new retired Master Guide Outfitter license. Section 8 is conforming language to specify that the holder of retired guide license may not guide. Section 9 provides effective dates for sections 3, 4, and 5 of the bill of April 1, 2013. That's to allow the board to meet on its regular schedule in December and March and adopt regulations that would take effect prior to the 2013 guiding season. And then Section 10 is effective date immediately other than for Sections 3, 4, and 5. Be happy to answer any questions.
I just have one on Section 6. If we could go back to that section about changing penalties to allow a court to order the board to suspend the license instead of requiring it to order the board to suspend the license. Just this language is technical, and I just see the additions of a sub 8 on line 16 and additions of 9 through 14 on 20. Does that get the job done by referring to other statutes, or help me out?
Mr. Chair, yes, it does. The primary issue is the current statute, if you look at each number of the pieces, requires for any game violation that the court order a suspension of the license. So if it's a minor violation, such as paperwork improperly being filled out, they have to order the suspension of the license.
But you've now brought them into the May, you brought number 8 into the May order.
That is correct.
And that's what gives you the change you need.
That is correct.
I see. It just moves it out of that sub 2. Got it. Okay. Thanks. Questions? Further questions? Good overview. Let's turn to Senator Menard. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Senator Linda Menard. I represent District G, both Palmer and Wasilla, and I'm here with my staff member, Steve Perrins, who is a big game registered guide. He's also famous for R5, which he resides at Rainy Day Pass. It's the oldest hunting lodge in the state of Alaska. So it's Rainy Day Lodge, or Rainy Pass Lodge, sorry. Mr. Chair, I wanted to testify in front of this committee today because I am the sponsor of the Senate companion bill to HB 229. We started a year later than the sponsor of HB 229, but I think it is a great bill and good policy that will serve the guiding community well and the Big Game Commercial Service Board as well. I believe the sponsor did a good job in presenting the bill today, and I appeal to the committee to move this bill so it can pass legislation before adjournment. As I previously mentioned, this legislation will be positive for the guiding industry as a whole. The language in this bill was crafted from input we received from both the guides and from Big Game Commercial Services Board. It was input from the industry members on the items they felt would make their own industry better. And I was happy, along with my chief of staff, Michael Rubito, and Steve Perrins here to do that. So, Mr. Chair, I'll be brief and won't take up any more of the committee time. I just wanted to go on record with this committee my support for this bill, and I thank you for allowing me to testify today, and happy Easter weekend.
Senator Murata, that's very kind of you. Thank you so much for being here. We have many people signed up to testify. We also, I want to let the committee know we have resources at our disposal for answering questions, including Lieutenant Bernard Chasten of the Alaska Wildlife Troopers, Mr. Kevin Saxby of the Attorney General's Office. Also available to answer questions is Mr. Thor Stacy from the Alaska Professional Hunters, Mr. Don Haberger from the Division of Corporations Business and Professional Licensing, and now we do have many people signed up to testify, and I'll let those who are testifying know that we are towards the end of the session. If you can keep your statements between 1 and 2 minutes, that'd be great. If you have specific provisions of the bill, we want to hear about that. If you're generally supportive or generally opposed, you can tell us that as well. So let's begin with Joe Klutsch. Mr. Klutsch from King Salmon, if you're there.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, can you hear me?
We sure can. Welcome to the committee.
Yeah, thank you. My name is Joe Klutsch, but it's often mispronounced. I've lived in King Salmon, Southwest Alaska, for over 40 years. I'm a master guide. I want to testify in favor of this legislation. It's been extremely well vetted and thought out with input from the troopers, from the Department of Law, from guides. I think it will be very beneficial for the guiding industry and for other people who are out there hunting, subsistence users, general residents. I think it's of particular importance that there are enforcement provisions in this that in any calling you're going to find some renegades out there, and this puts some teeth in the law that will allow the Commercial Service Board to get rid of some of these repeat offenders. You can see over and over again where one individual gets busted for this or that, and the next year they're back. And then the next year they're back. It takes the public safety and the system years to get rid of some of these people. And we can't tolerate that anymore. It's not good for anyone. But I'm very impressed with the amount of work that's gone into this. I support it wholeheartedly. And would urge its passage. Thank you.
Mr. Klutsch, thank you, and I apologize for mispronouncing your name. Next up is Kelly Vren. Kelly Vren from Birchwood, a member of the Big Game Commercial Services Board. Kelly, welcome to the committee if you can hear me.
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me as well?
Yes, we can. Please state your name and affiliation, and we'll be happy to hear your testimony.
All right. My name is Kelly Vren. I'm a master guide and outfitter, and I am also a resident of Sutton. My aircraft hangar just happens to be in Birchwood. I'm also a member of the Big Game Commercial Services Board, a second-year appointee. I'm in support of this bill. It's been, as Mr. Klutsch said, this is about a 2-year process. It's been thoroughly vetted and worked over by the Big Game Commercial Services Board with numerous hearings and breakout committees. The Department of Law has been present, as well as the Fish and Wildlife Protection. And I urge your support. And one bit of clarification on this, primarily in the field supervising. Once in a while, it's necessary for a registered guide to leave the field, such as to haul a client to an airport or run and do an errand involving the direct support of that hunt. This allows that person to do that without being in fear of not complying with the old strict case you absolutely had to be there. So this cleans that up quite a bit. And as Mr. Clutch said, the moral turpitude clause will allow the board to weed out some of these bad actors relatively quickly, as opposed to taking years and years. So with that, I'll close, and I'm in support, and thank you for allowing me to testify today.
Mr. Brennan, it was our pleasure. Thank you for being here. Let's turn now to Paul Johnson. Paul Johnson from Gull Cove. If you're there, go ahead and put yourself on the record, give us your name and affiliation, and we'll listen to your testimony.
Yeah, thank you. My name is Paul Johnson. I'm also with Kelly. I'm the Big Game Commercial Services Board as a guide representative. And I agree exactly with Joe Clutch and Kelly Brim said. I'd just like to add that some of these provisions are the other provisions that are in other boards as well. And I think this would be helpful. Our hope is that this will get through this year. We waited many years since the board was reinstated, almost seven, to come forward with something. So we hope it doesn't fall by the wayside, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your statement, and we'll turn now to Virgil Umphenor. Hoping I haven't...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Virgil Umphenor. Can you hear me okay?
We sure can. Go ahead and just state your... We've got your name. State your affiliation, if any, and we'll listen to your testimony.
Okay. I'm also a master guide. I live in North Pole. I'm fully in support of the bill. I just want to make a couple of comments about it. One of them, if you look at the bottom of page 2, where it says physically present in the field with the client at least once during the contracted hunt, it's being removed. That's a loophole for people that just take the client out, drop them off with an assistant guide, and then go stay in town and sleep between sheets every night, and then come and pick them up. They were out there one time. That was it. That takes that loophole out. It means that you're supposed to be out in the field guiding, is what it means. And then this, on page 3, where paragraph 8 comes out of section 2 and goes to section 1, where it goes from shall to may. To me, that is extremely important. The way it was, we were treated, guides were treated as if we were in a third world country or a second class citizen or a convicted felon on parole, because we would be put out of business for just a minor paperwork violation of any kind. It didn't make any difference, because paragraph 8 is nothing more than a catch-all paragraph. Basically states that if you were convicted of a misdemeanor violation for any regulation promulgated by any government entity, no matter what government entity it is, it could be the borough, for instance, for not filing a form with them on time or something, then you would automatically lose your license for a year. So to me, that is super important. But as I stated, I'm fully in support of the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Umphenor, thank you for making yourself available. Those were good comments. Let's turn now to Joe Want. Joe Want, if you're on the line.
Yes, my name is Joe Want. I live in Fairbanks. My concern, my main concern, and really my only concern, I guess, is with Section 4. Section 4 ASO 08854.160. As it is currently, as our regulations currently stand, at no time does an assistant guide have to be directly supervised or really supervised by a guide. He can go through his full 3 years after he gets his license, never once see a registered guide take the test. We have a situation where, because of the way the regulations, supervision, and participation are written, We have a case where an 18-year-old that has never seen a sheep, goat, or bear is able to be in camp by himself without a direct supervision or any supervision from a guide or Class A. So, and yet at the same time, a retired biologist from the Department of Alaska Department of Fish and Game, who's had 30 years, hunted numbers of sheep and killed several brown bears, he can't accompany a friend. I have, the guiding industry is important, but it's that sort of dichotomy that I think puts the whole system at risk. So I would like to, I support the bill with the exception of that one section, and I have submitted written comments to the members of this committee about 2 hours ago in the form of a PDF. And once again, I appreciate the efforts of this committee and the sponsors' effort in putting this bill together. Thank you.
Mr. Wan, thank you. I did receive your PDF. I printed it out. I have copies here for all the members. I made sure that, and I didn't know whether you'd shared it with Representative Feige's office. I assumed you did, but we just made sure to share it with him so that they would have the opportunity to comment on it here at today's hearing.
If you could, I would appreciate that. It was at the last minute, and I'm not real good on my computer, so I had a few technical issues to deal with. Thank you.
Well, I'll say I'm pretty impressed. You got a chart in there with colored lines and looked pretty well organized to me, and footnotes to boot. So you're plenty good on a computer as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Let's turn to Don Korberg. Don Korberg, if you're there.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. This is Don Korberg. I'm a public member on the Big Game Commercial Services Board and was recently elected chair. The saving grace of being elected chair is I'm surrounded, as you're listening today, to a number of qualified people that have a wealth of information, and believe me, I will call upon them frequently. I'm in favor of this House Bill 229 because I think it protects the intent of the law, but also makes it a little easier for not only some of the guides to operate, but also it's easier to enforce from our Wildlife Bureau people. And it also will ease the workload for the Division of Occupational Licensing. We hung up a little bit on that word primarily, and that word tends to allow an exemption for people in case of emergency to leave the field. One thing to be, I guess, cognizant of is if this bill passes, this board will definitely be looking at the regulations to address in the future, and we're already in the process of trying to formulate committees that will take a look at the definitions of supervision, participation, and even the definition of field. I just received this fax. I got it as a fax from Joe Wand, and I think there's some excellent information in there that hopefully this board can take to provide a better definition of these three terms, and so that maybe we can public notice that this summer and then have it addressed at our meeting in December. But with that, I'd certainly appreciate the committee and encourage them to support the bill. Thank you.
Mr. Korberg, thank you. Let's turn now to Dan Montgomery.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dan Montgomery. I'm a master guide. I live in Wasilla, Alaska. I've been on every commercial big game services board meeting for the last 6 years, and we've been working very hard on these regulations changes and stuff, and I support this bill 100%. In Section 4, as it reads now, that participation in the field, I operate out of a small village of 82 people, Port Hyden on the Alaska Peninsula, and in order to take our hunter that we bring right into the airport there, which is a state mandated airport, so that doesn't count in the field, and the village itself doesn't count in the field, so we actually have to drive 5 miles out of town before we can take that bear hunter hunting on the village land right there in the village that we have access to through a agreement with the village corporation. But in order to hunt that person right there in the village, out of our base camp in the village, we actually have to drive them out of town. And there's stuff like that that we're trying to clean up or this participation, we don't want it to go away. We just want it to make a little more sense where we don't have to do these things just to be qualified to in those sort of circumstances where we can hunt right in a village. And I support the bill, and we've worked very hard on it and put a lot of hours in it. And we certainly understand we need to be regulated, but we'd just like to make it a little easier to operate where we don't have to do silly things like that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Montgomery. Let's turn now to the room where we have Karen Polly. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'm Karen Polly. I'm a public member of the Big Game Commercial Services Board. I support this bill. I think it will lead to better professionalism among the guides and will also help us promote the guiding industry as a very professional kind of organization. I also support the retired part of it. I think that's important. We've had people who've committed to this big game industry for many, many years, and they are essentially retired now, and that's an important status to them. It enables them to provide other services, but not guiding services. So I support the bill and appreciate this. I'd like to see it moved forward because we've been working on it for 2 years. Thank you.
Thanks for coming in today. We also have Thor Stacey. Why don't we have Mr. Stacey come forward?
Mr. Chair, my name is Thor Stacey, and I represent the Alaska Professional Hunters Association, and I was just I'm available for any questions the committee might have on the bill. The Alaska Professional Hunters Association is in strong support of this bill.
Thank you. With respect to Section 4, I haven't read Mr. Wants' letter line for line as I've scanned it and shared it. I'm wondering whether his concerns are more about regulation or whether they're about the statute. Do you have a view on that, or should I ask maybe Mr. Saxby?
I hate to put words in anyone's mouth, but I think that the overall concern, Mr. Chair, is just the intent of supervision. There's a very important a relationship between the supervising guide and the assistant guide and how services are conducted in the field for the client to ensure a variety of positive things happens as regard to being a qualified professional. And I think that Mr. Wants' concerns overall are very valid. I think that the need to define and understand what supervising, conducting means are important. And I think that because the board is committed to do that, I think that the intent will be carried out through the regulatory process. As it stands right now, the removing of physically present in the field with a client at least once during the contracted hunt, that's a superfluous supervision requirement. It doesn't accomplish the intent. It's being circumvented by going down to a river below high water mark where you're outside of a village where there's permanent dwellings. So it doesn't have a meaningful effect on supervision in the field. I think that the work that's been done on redrafting the statute here allows for regulations to go either way, to be more or less restrictive. And I think that when you have a board process, I think that's the goal, that the regulatory process can go one way or the other with the statutory intent behind it. So that's our position.
This is not an area in which I have any great expertise, but it looks to me that you're making the presence of the guide is more strongly encouraged by the language that you have here. Once you take out this loophole that we've heard lines 31 and 32, or lines 31 on page 2 and line 1 on page 3 referred to as a loophole, you remove that and you say that the guide's got to be primarily in the field supervising and participating. It seems like you're making sure he's there or she's there more often.
Mr. Chair, that's correct, and keep in mind that the fear is to have someone sitting in Anchorage or Florida sipping pina coladas while hunts are being conducted under their name, and supervision requirements with some kind of proximity attached to, you know, the guide being in the area. That's the key here. as well as the training of assistant guides, because assistant guides are trained by that. So those things, the concerns expressed by Mr. Watt on where an assistant guide can be and what kind of qualifications you need to be, those are different concerns than what's addressed in this bill. So I would separate that concern from this bill and stay on topic with the supervision requirements.
Appreciate the encouragement to stay on topic. I was going to start a discussion about where and when people sip pina coladas, but it's probably not productive.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I don't think it happens a lot in Muldoon.
I'm just going to, you know, right.
I do.
So, other questions for Mr. Stacey? Thank you for the strong presentation. Further, any wrap-up comments you'd like to make, Representative Feige or your staff?
Again, for the record, Michael Pascal, staff to Representative Feige. As you can see, the bill brings a tremendous amount of support. I think the concerns that were raised by Mr. Wong are valid in their presentation. The goal here was to have the Big Game Commercial Services Board have the authority to write the regulations necessary to properly regulate the industry, and that's what we're attempting to accomplish with this bill versus trying to sit here in this forum and try to develop those regulations with us not having the expertise that the guides and the members of the board do in that case. With that being said, I guess I would entertain any questions that there might be concerning the bill.
I don't see any. I'll just note for the committee, this is the final committee referral for a House bill in the Senate. So with that, I think we'll be a little just cautious, hold on to it over the weekend, expect to take action on it Monday, and that gives you all the time in the world to pass the bill. So I wish you good luck. Thank you. Thank you all for being here. Let's turn now to HB 224, brought to me and the committee by Representative Lindsey Holmes, someone who's my representative in the House of Representatives. And her able staff. Welcome to the committee. Both of you can have a seat. Put yourselves on the record, and the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you to you and members of the committee for hearing this bill today. I am, for the record, Lindsey Holmes, representative from House District 26. I was just going to make an opening sentence or a statement or two and then turn it over to Mr. Waldo, and we also have Ed Sniffen with us who can, between the two of them, can walk you through everything. Mr. Chairman, this bill, House Bill 274, clears up a potential ambiguity that's come to our attention in Alaska's Consumer Protection Act to clarify that the state can step in and protect Alaskan consumers when the federal government is not acting. We want to be clear that the state and its citizens aren't left without remedies because of a misapplication of what is a so-called safe harbor provision in our Consumer Protection Act. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to let James Waldo walk you through specifically what the bill does.
Mr. Waldo, and I guess I'll just say that I am coming to this bill for the first time, and it's confusing.
We're hoping, Mr. Chairman, to shed ample light on this.
I'll point out for the committee, we do have Mr. Sniffen here, and I'm sure we'll get clarity here in the next 15 or 20 minutes. But Mr. Waldo, begin us down that path to clarity.
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. My name is James R. Waldo, and I'm staff to Representative Lindsey Holmes. As Representative Holmes mentioned, there is an ambiguity as far as where our Consumer Protection Act can apply in regard to federal laws that may regulate conduct also regulated by the Consumer Protection Act.
So is that what's happening on line 5? It says nothing in these statutes applies to, and then it applies, you know, nothing in the statute applies to what? Things covered by federal law? Is that what
essentially
sub 1 is trying to tell me?
Yes, that's what's going on right now in that safe harbor provision, is there's an exemption for both state law and federal law that cover conduct that is also covered by the Consumer Protection Act. So what the bill is essentially going to do is remove that exemption for federal law and preserve it for state law or regulation.
Okay.
The reason this is important is because it's good to have that exemption when it comes to state law. If you have something going wrong with an insurance company and you're a citizen and you're upset with how your insurance company is treating you, there are already lots of state laws and regulations, very specialized, very good at dealing with insurance. They happen to be over there in the Division of Insurance. And so instead of using the Consumer Protection Act, which isn't specifically designed for insurance, we say go use the laws that we wrote specifically for insurance, go to the Division of Insurance and solve your problem there. And that happens to work very well. Additionally, when you enter a situation where the state is concerned enforcement is too much or too little, the state can always adapt those laws and change those laws to accommodate the situation. Now it gets tricky when we talk about federal law, because when the feds preempt us, obviously we're preempted and that's the end of the discussion. But there are places where it's a bit more of a gray area, where there's shared jurisdiction between the federal government and the state, or perhaps the federal government has laws or regulations that they do not intend to enforce and intend for the state to do its own enforcement. In those cases, it could be the case that this safe harbor provision as it currently exists in state law would prevent our Consumer Protection Act from applying when we fully intend for it to apply. And in fact, this was the case, or was an issue brought up in a case that had to do with a couple drug companies. And I believe I included the judicial order coming from Judge Beislein in Fairbanks where this was discussed. And, you know, just to put up front, this case is still ongoing. It has not been decided. The state still thinks that it clearly has the right to enforce the Consumer Protection Act in this case. But this bill would make it amply clear that the state has the right to enforce the consumer protection law in these cases where the federal government is not going to take action and the state government needs to take action to protect our citizens.
And I do see the decision, the order from Judge Beislein. What pages does he discuss the issues that impinge on this bill?
I think if you look, to page 18. Wait, hang on a second.
I see it. Yep, 45, 50, 481.
Yes.
That's it? Okay. Further questions? I don't see any.
All right.
Thank you. Let's turn to Mr. Sniffen. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Ed Sniffen. I'm an Assistant Attorney General in Anchorage, and my responsibilities include enforcement of Alaska's consumer protection and antitrust laws. And I thank you for taking the time to hear this bill. I think Mr. Waldo did an excellent job of explaining exactly what this bill will do. We do have situations that come up where we have the U.S. Supreme Court, for example, or a particular federal agency like the Federal Trade Commission actually announce that there is shared jurisdiction between the states and the federal government over certain areas like drug labeling and other things. And so we feel like we should be allowed to take action against companies who violate our Consumer Protection Act on those issues. Because of the way our statute is written, if there is a federal law or regulation out there that covers that conduct, doesn't matter if it's preempted or not, if it's just out there, whether the feds enforce it or not, defendants are using that as a shield against our enforcement activity. And so what this bill does is remove that and allows us to take action, you know, if we need to. Of course, as Mr. Waldo said, if the feds preempt an area, of course, we would not be allowed to do that. But this is not really talking about preemption. We have cases where the feds have specifically found there is no preemption, and we still can't take action because even though there's no preemption, the conduct is still regulated or prohibited. So we think our language is strong enough that if the feds aren't doing anything, we take the position we can still go ahead and do that. We're arguing that position in this case that you saw the order from Judge Beislein on. But this amendment makes it very clear.
So this bill makes you more able to aggressively and protect consumers of the state of Alaska?
Mr. Chairman, it does, especially in those cases where we have authority to do something, perhaps, but the federal government decides for whatever reason they're just not going to do anything, then we would be allowed to go forward.
Thank you. Don't see any questions.
Thank you again.
Excellent. This is the last committee referral for this bill. It seems all squared away to me, but we'll hold it over the weekend and make sure it's been vetted carefully. With that, we're going ahead and adjourn.